Skelly Wangard is an executive with a passion for healthcare strategy design, complex operational change management, innovation in healthcare technology, and intentional cultural enrichment. And she's going to tell us what all that means. but truly, this healthcare couldn't be more complicated, and she knows all about it. With a bachelor's and master's in nursing from the University of San Francisco, Skelly began her career in healthcare as a bedside nurse, but then quickly began taking up various nursing leadership roles, especially after joining North American Healthcare in 2008. And then in 2012, she joined Ensign Services as director of nursing and kept going up. In 2014, she was promoted to Vice President of Care Continuum. And then in 2017, she moved over to Kaiser Permanente, where she again led strategy operations for hospital and post-acute operations and many other sort of, I guess you would call them units within the Kaiser Permanente system, again as a Vice President of related to Continuum of Care. And then most recently, just in June, I believe, came over to By the Bay Health here in Marin as CEO. In addition to her roles in healthcare, she's an avid trail runner, so I need to ask you about some trails because I'm still learning them, and spends a whole bunch of time with family up in the mountains in our beautiful Bay Area. So please join me in offering a very, very warm welcome to Skelly Wangard.
Do I have to turn it on? Hello. I'm on now. There we go. Well, first and foremost, note to self, I think I might want to shorten that bio. So that's probably my first takeaway from this. Sorry you had to listen to all of that. We're about to review just that. So that was kind of a long bio, but thank you for the warm welcome, Dr. DeFirmary. And thank you very much, Dean Lee. And thank you, Dr. Lucy and Mariah, who kind of prepped me for this. And thank you to all of you students for being here to listen to my career journey. I'm really excited to share it with you. And what I will say in starting is this story that you're about to listen to is a very non-traditional route. And I want to start with that because I think it's really, really important that there is, you hear stories from all different people and that there's a diverse road of how you got through your career. And mine is very different than the very linear trajectory that many people have. So starting with that, I'm going to share a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about me today, a little bit about where I come from and where I grew up. And then I'm going to share my trajectory and the timeline of my career. And then I'm going to just impart a couple key components of, I would call them, professional lessons that have kind of guided me along the way. And there's a million of those, but I've got, I think, four or five of them that I think were really, really key that I want to share with you. So, a couple pictures. This is my family. On the left, again, very non-traditional. I have a diverse family. I have my wife and my three kids, and we have my son-in-law. And these babies are really where I spend most of my time. I live in Petaluma, and just want you to kind of get to know them a little bit. And to the right are my nieces and nephews, and the newest one wasn't in the picture, but this is where I spend a lot of my time. And I think the importance of showing you this is that business folks, I think, kind of get a little bit over hyper-focused about what they do in business. And this is a lot about what makes us really, really great in our positions as leaders. So I kind of want to share that with you. Now we're going to take it way back. We're going to go way, way back to baby Skelly. And I also want to share this because, again, I was born to parents that were 19 and 20 years old in a place called Stockton, California. I don't know if you know where that is. Okay, shout out. Stockton, California. Well, I grew, thank you. Nice, nice. So I grew up in Stockton, California when I was really, really young, this young, to two parents that were super, super young and super, super hippie. They named me Skelly, so before any of you ask that question, I'll just go ahead and let you know. That's what happens when you have 19 and 20-year-olds in the 70s raising kids. They name their kids things like Skelly. And so it was about 1978. My parents were still raising me in Stockton. It was a 90% Latin community. And so we grew up, all our friends and family still to this day are of Latin heritage. And my mom had a sister who actually went and did her undergrad and graduate school right here at Dominican College. And she said one day, she called up my mom and said, "You've got to bring Skelly here. She has to grow up here." And my mom said, "There's no way. I know what Marin County's like, and there's absolutely no way we're gonna be able to raise our child in Marin. It's too expensive." And she said, "Well, I think there might be something we can do about that." And she said, "Well, what? What are you gonna do? Pay for my rent?" And she said, "Well, you can live with us." And so we moved, myself, my brother, and my mom and dad moved to Marin, and we moved in with my aunt, my uncle, and their two kids. And for my entire life in Novato, so it was Novato, California, my entire life, I rented. We rented. We never owned a home, and we always lived with about 5 or 6 to 8 different family members. And I think, again, really, really important, didn't necessarily, right, and you grew up in Marin County, that's very different. And so, again, just coming from, you know, we didn't have health insurance, so where did I go when I was sick? All the, have you heard of Marin Community Clinics? So I had ear infections, I would wait in the long line, and my dad ended up being a landscaper, and my mom was a housekeeper. And so what did I do my whole life growing up? I mowed lawns and I cleaned houses. And that's how I got money to be able to buy clothes for school, because we didn't have that kind of money. It was hand-me-downs from everyone. And so I mowed lawns, and cleaned enough houses where I could get as many different outfits as I could, which was like 2 or 3, and that's what I would wear to school. So I guess it's important just to hear that that's my start, that's my beginning. And school wasn't easy. I was babysitting a lot, and I was working a lot, and so school kind of, I'll just say it kind of came secondary for me, because it wasn't really an option for me to do anything else. I had to help with rent, I had to help raise my sisters and brothers, and I had to make money so that I could have food and I could have, right, things that we needed to have. So imagine, I grew up very differently than the kids, my other, you know, friends in Marin County. And again, imagine school was secondary. So I did not have your traditional educational path either. My education ended up that I struggled. I mean, struggles. It was C's, pretty much my entire life. And actually, high school was something that I decided, you know what, I need to work. Work is more important than actually going to school. And even my parents were saying, "Well, you gotta, you know, figure that one out." And I said, "Yeah, but we need to put food on the table. That's what we need to do." So I actually, in my junior year of high school, I dropped out of school. True story. Dropped out of school and went to school a very non-traditional route. So that Dominican graduate that I told you about, my aunt, she ended up being the Marin County School District Superintendent. Her name is Mary Jane Burke. And I know, she's incredible. Mary Jane actually had a very non-traditional education route, which was the one that I went down. Just again, really, really important to kind of call those things out, because what I'm about to share with you is a little bit about my then I get it, right? So now I'm out of the house, I'm living on my own, and I go, okay, you know what? There's gotta be a different way. There's got to be a different way than cleaning houses, mowing lawns, and doing this route, right? There's got to be a different way. And I think there's an educational path here. I'm just thinking there's an educational path. Well, school can be really, really expensive. but there's all sorts of grants. So I was able to somehow squeak by. Anyone heard of the Doyle Grant up in Santa Rosa JC, Santa Rosa Junior College? I was a recipient of the Doyle Grant. And not only did they give you money to go to school, they actually gave you money to live as well. So that's really where my journey started with my career path, was saying, okay, I gotta kind of fight for this. I got those different grants. And then from there, I got my nursing degree. And then from there, I got another scholarship to go to nursing school. And then from there, I became a nurse. All the whole time, working the entire time. So then I guess what I want to share is from 2007 to 2012, that was my first real job. That was my first entrance into a job that was probably making more than $4 or $5 an hour. So imagine, I was just floored by, so I had struggled. You heard a lot of years of struggle. And then I get here and I'm actually in a position to actually make a little bit of money and then focus on, okay, what do I wanna do? You know, I wanna be a nurse, but I started being a nurse and I realized, oh my goodness, nursing's really hard, but these business folks aren't making any easier on us. There are a lot of efficiencies that could be built in the system. There wasn't a lot of systemness when I was a nurse way back when. So from there, I went into some leadership roles like director of nursing, which taught me how to, you know, lead people and build culture and drive people to want to work for the great, you know, for the greater cause, for something very specific, for a vision and a mission. And then in, it was shortly thereafter, I was about 2012 to 2014, I moved into an executive role. I was really, really interested in the guts of operations. I wanted to have a P&L. I wanted to be responsible for the true business. And so Ensign gave me a shot. They said, you know what? You're actually pretty good at this director of nursing thing, and you kind of get the business background. You know what? We could probably use someone like you. You're a pretty good salesman. You work really, really hard. And so they gave me a shot, Ensign Services. It's about a $100 million organization now. When I joined it, it was about a $2.5 billion organization. So huge growth, even in the time that I was with them. And ultimately, I was able to have a few departments under me, and one of them was government relations. So that was a real interest in me. And I think what really probably took me on my, what you're about to learn about my career path, is my curiosity. I always had a big curiosity for what's the big picture, not just keeping small in kind of the singular linear operation. I really was interested in how the organization ticks and how we get to kind of the big picture, so all of the operations. So from there, I was on an airplane from about 2013, 14 through 2017. I was national, and I was in an airplane all over the country. We were in 17 different states, and I was working for different hospitals and health systems and looking at all the, does anyone know what managed care is? Anyone know what Kaiser Permanente is and like those health plans? So basically what I was doing was teaching organizations how to be successful with all of those different payers. And that's where kind of I got my in to understanding, okay, this stuff is really complex, but if you kind of start understanding it from kind of A to Z, you know, there's some value there. So from then, I would say I loved my job, but I was in an air, again, flying all over the place. And I was in meetings every single day with all these different health plans. So whether it was Kaiser, United, the Blues, et cetera, I would sit in their offices talking to, I mean, just these national bigwigs, these CEOs. And I had a whole lot to say, and they loved it. But I always felt a little bit like an imposter, like I didn't have the background of health plan operations. I didn't know what their health plan was about. And so I knew I needed that experience. So this is another piece that's kind of important about the linear view versus kind of sometimes your career can take a little bit of a zigzag approach. And I guess as you get into your career, remember, that's okay sometimes. This move right here, because I needed health plan experience, and for you, it'll be something else. I don't know what business you're into. There's a lot of really cool businesses. For me, it was healthcare, but I knew there was a missing piece. My resume needed something, and it was health plan experience. So in 2017, there was an opportunity with Kaiser Permanente, and that was where I was gonna get that missing piece in my resume. So interviewed, got the job, and that landed me in Marin and Sonoma over about 8 different service lines. So departments like skilled nursing, home health, inpatient operations, et cetera. And I will say what that really taught, again, now I have the experience. So it wasn't linear. And remember, I guess I want to say also this. I think I can say this. It's my journey, so I can share with you. That was almost about $100,000 a year pay cut for me. But I knew it was that important. It was critical for my resume. So I guess just as you build your journey and as different opportunities come up, I really want you to think about, is it sometimes is worth it. Money isn't everything. Your resume and building your resume and building your credibility and building your value as a leader is sometimes more important. So from there, I ended up being able to do that work in Marin Sonoma really well. So again, back to if you do things really well, people take notice. And Kaiser Permanente Northern California noticed. And so they pulled me into their regional offices so that then I was able to work over all of Northern California. Before I was over 2 service areas, I moved to 14 different service areas across Northern California. And what that taught me was how to compartmentalize different strategy across many, many, many service lines, which was a big learning curve. And then from there, again, people take notice when you work hard. And I was able to be successful at the regional level, and they tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, what do you think about this vice president job in Mid-Atlantic states, which is the District of Columbia, Northern Virginia, and Maryland? And I said, well, that's a long ways from home. But good news is, my kids were all out of high school by that point. And so I was in a good position to move out there. But again, probably not where I wanted to be. So it was a risk that I was taking, and it was a sacrifice that I was making for my career, because I knew it was going to give me the experience of an entire region. Now I'm over the entire region as the VP that I took. So I took that that move. And then in 2022, late 2022, I was called upon by this organization in Northern California, which was very close to where I grew up, which was Novato, and it was by the Bay Health. And they tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, we'd like you to apply for this position in Northern California. And I thought, oh, you've got to be kidding me. How in the world am I ready for a CEO position? Are you kidding me? There's no, how can that be? But the truth was, I was moving so fast that I didn't realize over all these years, I filled in all the gaps that I needed to be able to be ready for this position. So I didn't even notice it, but others did. They noticed it, and they called it out, and they said, we want you to apply for this job, and we see all of the different experience that you've had, and it's all over the place, but exactly what we want. And I didn't even recognize that. So I applied for the job, and about 4 months, and I will tell you, this is another interesting, tidbit about business. When you get to positions like the vice president, president, CEO, just be ready, because it's a long haul of a recruitment period. It was about 4 months, and it was a lot of interviews. We have an entire board, and they had to interview me. So just get ready. You'll all be there someday if you want to be there. But it is, it's a healthy process. Okay, so that wasn't supposed to come up next, I had one more slide that isn't coming up apparently, because there is, and I'll get to that next slide. It's a good one. But there are a few components of, let's just call them career lessons, like I spoke about, that have been really, really important to me. One of them is that, how do I say it? Let's say it like this. Every interaction that you have, no matter what it is, whether it's in your business career or whether it's in school, no matter where it is an interview. Act as if it's an interview, every single one of them, because you have no idea when that could be, right, somebody that could make or break your, right, your next job, your next, you know, path, your next journey. So every interaction is an interview. And I think once I learned that, and let me just tell you, every interaction, I did not act as if it was an interview my entire life. That is for darn sure. I've stepped in, you know what, many, 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 many times. And then someone did say this to me along the road. And I said, yeah, you know what, that's probably a really good idea. Okay, the next is, and you're gonna get lots of advice. This is just my silly advice. But the next one is, it is really important to care deeply about the people that you work with. And I don't mean the people that work for you, because we all are working with people. And so care deeply about them, because we all have a story. We're all here for a greater purpose, and just making sure that you care deeply about them, it goes a long ways. People need to feel valued, and as you get into leadership positions, it's really, really important if you want to pull them along the way. And then I guess I'll just end with keep doing things that you love, and that was a really important lesson for me. Imagine for a long time, I thought that because I had such a tough upbringing, and because my journey was not easy and the road was not pretty a lot of times, when I got there, I thought I had to just only work hard. So that's what I did for a lot of years. And there were some times where I burnt out badly. And it wasn't, you start to be not successful there. And so I guess, just remember that there's diversity is very, very good for your brain. It's very, very good for your career. So keep doing anything that you love very deeply. And what I loved very, very deeply was basketball officiating. I was a Division I basketball referee for 25 years. And actually, that is my biggest connection to Dominican. I reffed for 25 years for Dominican College. This was kind of my, we call it your backyard gym. This was my backyard gym. Along with every other D1, you know, you guys are Division II, but every Division I school across the West Coast. So, and I really think part of my success was this. Without a doubt, it was. It taught me something that business couldn't teach me, without a doubt. You know, you can't learn everything sitting in an office and leading and, you know, doing work. This diversity is really, really important. So don't stop with your passions. And I think that's all I've got. And I really appreciate you all listening. And I wish all of you very great career paths. And if you have questions, please, please. I think we have these folks right here with some questions.
Yeah, introduce Zay, who is the co-president of the Brodsky Students Association, and everybody else. I think you guys are going to introduce yourselves. And the idea is to have a conversation.
Love it.
So I'll invite you guys up to the stage and hand you the clicker.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you're in charge now.
Okay, I'm in charge. You want to answer someone?
Yeah.
Switch. It's the first time we've done this co-president thing, so. Yeah. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for everyone for being here. Thank you so much for being here. I'm Zay, like he said. I'm one of the co-presidents for the Brodsky Students Association this year. I have with me my amazing team and board. Also my, wait, we're each other's right hand, right? So, yeah, I'll let him introduce himself.
I'm Ethan. I'm a junior business major. I'm also co-president of Zay.
Hi, I'm Naomi. I am the CMO of the BSA group.
Hi, I'm Kendall, and I'm a freshman in the Barashi School of Business.
Hi, I'm Morgan Newkirk. I'm a sophomore in the business program, and I'm a BSA's treasurer.
So BSA is a club that all the business members are a part of, that you guys can come and join. Sorry, this is my first time speaking to a large group of people.
Like Ethan said, BSA is a club that you all business majors and all majors are really welcome to join in case you guys want to enhance your business skills with networking or even just practicing or gaining connections in the world of business. We do work really closely with faculty and staff. Julia, Dr. Lucy, Courtney, all of them, we work closely with them and they help us give you guys tools that are always available for you guys to use in case you guys want to network with your peers. Like I said, network with other people in the business world. That great web of networking.
Me,
Ethan, Carla on the back. Carla's awesome. Carla's been here for so long and we don't want her to go, but she recently graduated and she's just still with us helping us out because me and Ethan need a lot of help. She's in the what? MBA program?
Yes.
Wow. Naomi, awesome Naomi. Morgan and Kendall, like we said earlier. So thanks for listening to that really, really long introduction, guys. How are you doing?
Awesome.
All right.
We're gonna start this off.
All right.
So, is there a point in your life that you distinctly remember when you made the decision where the outcome could make or break your career?
Oh, yeah. When you work for large organizations, a lot of times you'll get tapped for different positions. And let's just say sometimes you think they're a good fit and sometimes they think it's a good fit. And there were times in my career where I was tapped for positions and it didn't feel right for me. And so there was a point where I said no to certain positions, and I didn't know what the outcome was going to be. That was a scary decision point for me, and having to kind of soul search and say this isn't the right move for me was a tough one. But it could have truly been a make or break situation, and let's put it this way. I believe that there's nothing that we can do, because I think if you're not making a lot of mistakes, you're probably not getting some upward trajectory. So I don't know that there's many mistakes that we're going to make that we can't recover from. So make or break, you know, it could happen. But I think those were probably the biggest ones, is where I was tapped and it didn't feel right for me. And I had to say, not today. It's not for me today.
What has drawn you to the health profession?
Oh my goodness. Let's just say that there came a talk about a time that comes in your life. There was a time in my life where I had to make a determination for what I was going to go to school for. And I had to ask myself, how are you going to use your life best? What is that going to look like for you? Because I think we all struggle, right? What road are we going to go down? What's that road that we're going to go down? What are we going to be passionate about? And so that's where kind of the decision came for me, is asking myself, what are you going to use your life for that's going to make the biggest difference in the world? And that's what I came up with. It's going to be healthcare. That's what I'm going to do.
Thank you. We know that you are highly ranked in many of the roles that you have had in your past. We want to know, what's the hardest part of your job since?
Oh, goodness. All right. Let's get real. The hardest part, I have a colleague today, her name's Trish Lepore, and she helps me with this on a daily basis. The hardest job I find, and I think if you ask and poll other leaders, they'll feel the same, people. People are very challenging to manage. They have, right, we all are very, very different. We're very different. And I shouldn't say it's challenging, but it's also the absolutely most rewarding, without a doubt. Leading people, inspiring people, you know, having one-on-one conversations with people or group conversations with people to say, hey, I'm here for you. I want to lead you in whatever direction you want. Tell me how you feel valued. Tell me what you want in your career. But without a doubt, it's a delicate dance. So I would say that's probably the most challenging part of my job.
Thank you.
Thank you for that as well. Where do you see your company in 10 years from now? So like, what's your 10-year plan?
Ooh, that's a good one. Okay, so I just started with this organization about 6 months ago. And in order to get this position, I was required, so the prompt for my presentation to the entire board of directors of this organization, the prompt was, get ready for it, what have you done? You've been in the CEO role for the last 6 months. What have you done? And what are you gonna do in the next 3 years? So I just had to do this. And so in my mind and in this presentation, we were able to successfully grow about 6x, so 6 times our current size. We're currently about a $65 million revenue generating organization, so 6 times that. We have a census, a hospice census of about 530, so 6 times that. So imagine you've got to do growth in your current markets, but then you're also going to have to grow outside those markets and get market share outside of those as well. So that's really what we're trying to accomplish. But I will say this. You can't do any of that. All of us in the By the Bay organization will never be able to successfully do that if we don't focus on people. People have to come first, and I mean that. And I know, I hope someday when you get into big roles, you remember me saying this to you, because I swear to you, I promise, if you don't invest in the people in like the most meaningful way and your organization isn't the best place to work and people really truly feel like when they come to work every single day, they feel like it's the best place to work. And whenever you're trying to do a new initiative, whenever you're trying to do anything in the organization, they don't feel like they had an absolute invite to the party. That's what I call it. You want everyone to feel invited all the time. That's how we're gonna get there.
Thank you. What advice would you give aspiring graduates?
I love that. I would say a couple things, because I do believe in balance. And so it is really probably enticing for all of you as new grads to dive right in, like go deep and dive right in. I would say, not that we all have, because when I graduated, I didn't have all the options in the world, right? I kind of had to, I was searching for a long time. But being thoughtful about what organization is right for you is really important. I just said it with one of the other questions. A lot of times, there will be organizations that feel like you're the right fit. I want to share with you that really doesn't matter if it's not a right fit for you. If you don't feel like that organization is a right fit for you, the culture isn't right for you, the leader that you're going to work for isn't the right fit for you, it's probably not a great fit. So I guess just don't rush it and be thoughtful about your employment.
I have another question. How do you balance your work life and your personal life with such a hugely successful company, in my opinion, and hopefully everyone else's opinion, By the Bay?
Yeah. No, it is. You're absolutely right. It is a very successful organization. So I have learned And this did not happen overnight, so I don't want anyone to get any kind of big ideas that this that I had this when I first started down the road in my career path. I have learned what works for me in the structure of how I need to be disciplined in my life. And that's really important. So I guess I paid really close attention to how much sleep I need, how much exercise I need, the food I need to eat, the number of hours that I should really work in a day and I shouldn't work in a day. And if on one day I'm, you know, burning the midnight oil and I'm pulling a, you know, a couple 12 midnight nights in a row, then you know what? I take some time off because you will burn out. So I think just the structure and the discipline of what needs to happen, I don't overindulge very often in anything. And I think that was something that I had to learn. I enjoyed going out with family and friends probably more than I should have. And I had to learn that that's going to set me back. And so I need to be a little bit more disciplined in that. And I also learned if I don't exercise, oh, nobody wants to be around me. So I learned that that has to be part of my routine every single day. So I think that's really the balance. It was learned behavior over many, many years.
Thank you. What was the greatest challenge switching jobs?
Oh, goodness. So as you see, you saw up there, I've switched jobs a lot. And some of that is because I'm hungry and I'm eager and I'm driven. A lot of that was people like that. People like driven people, capable people, people that are passionate. And I will say, the hardest part about switching jobs is you invest so much in the previous job. It's such a big investment. You built teams and you built camaraderie and you built systems and processes that are functioning and kicking butt. And leaving that is really, really hard. But ultimately, it is also a successful leader that builds a succession plan and that has those departments and systems in place so that when you take yourself out of it, it's a well-tuned, fine-tuned machine. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. It's really, really tough to leave it, but it's also really special when you see it continue to be successful, and then you're on to the next success option.
Thank you for that. We see that you have a very well-rounded resume, and we see that you've switched jobs throughout the years. Some you've stayed a year, some you've stayed more than a year. How do you recommend that for us graduating? Do you see students having success in switching jobs or staying in a specific job for a longer period of time?
Yeah, that's a great question. I really think it's a couple things. I think it's multifaceted. I think one, it's very industry specific. So I think there's a lot of industries where jumping around has a tremendous benefit. And then I also think there are some industries where having a little more staying power and a little more grounding makes sense. And then the other piece I will say is it's really personal. It's very personal. I think whatever feels right for you is what is right for you. I would never recommend, again, that you stay in a position where you don't feel valued, you don't feel like you're making a difference, right? We want to feel all of those things every day. So I would say it's really personal, but I would say it's probably industry specific. I think healthcare in general, getting too jumpy because it's so complex, you do need to learn the systemness. So there really is like that 1 to 2 year space or even longer where you need to kind of learn the systems. But other, you know, like tech, I think for sure it's appropriate to bounce around a bit, and there's so many opportunities.
Thank you. So I know that you had mentioned earlier that in your interview process you had to go a little bit more in depth about what your future plans are. I was curious if you could go more into details and share more about that with us.
Oh, absolutely. So I think what was attractive to the board of directors was my number one priority was people. So not to not to to beat that point up, but I think everyone needs to hear that really resonated with everyone, because especially in the market that we're in right now, where recruitment of great talent and retention of great talent is tough. It's really, really tough. So if you don't have a strong people strategy, it's going to be really tough to meet any other targets operationally that you're trying to accomplish. So that was number one. I think also the growth strategy was big. There's, in our industry specifically, there's a lot of for-profit entrants right now in our market. So in order for us to be successful, we need scalability. And if we have a low census, we don't have that. And so growth was really, really important. The other piece I think that I really hit home on was all around brand recognition and marketing, and making sure that we had a consistent product that was recognizable in the market, and that when people had a choice to make a selection for a hospice, home health, palliative care organization, that By the Bay Health, without a doubt, bar none, was the choice that they were gonna make.
Thank you. I know you talked a little bit about your next 5 to 10 years. Just to go off that, do you plan to expand By the Bay Health?
Absolutely, absolutely. So lots of expansion, and I would say you never want to grow just for growth's sake, because that can get hasty, and that can turn into probably an acquisition or a merger that didn't necessarily make sense for your organization. But there's a lot of organic growth opportunities, especially in the Bay Area, that make sense. And right now in our market, hospice in particular, there is about 30%, so we've retained across the United States, we have retained only 30% of the nonprofit hospice organizations across this country. That's really sad, right? That really means that these for-profit organizations have really entered this market. And I guess what's kind of a little bit concerning is that we have a hospice benefit in specific, is the hospice, right? It's the benefit that you get to use at the end of your life. And so what happens if we have too many for-profit players, that benefit's gonna change a lot. The services that they provide are gonna change because they're looking for a profit margin. Whereas in the nonprofit world, we're not necessarily looking for a profit margin unless we just deep dive it right back into the organization. So the benefits, and there's a lot of articles on this, the benefits that nonprofit providers give to our patients versus for-profit, very, very different. And so again, we just wanna, what our goal at By the Bay Health is to not only sustain, but grow the nonprofit hospice entities across the nation.
You were the vice president of the care curriculum. Super impressive. What skills were you confident in going into the job, and what skills did you gain when you leveled up?
I love these questions. These are great. So he asked specifically about my role as vice president in the continuum of care. And what I'll say is I absolutely felt confident in my ability as an operator. I had been an operator for many, many years, so I knew the business side. I knew the X's and O's, as they say, of business. So I felt really, really confident there. I had over 1,200 employees in my org structure underneath me. I was really scared about that. I was really scared that I wasn't going to be able to have an impact on every single one of those employees. And like I said, make them feel valued, make them feel like they're doing great work every single day and feeling supported by their leaders. I was really nervous about that. And then I think overall, just that was my biggest step into an executive leadership role. And so I had some healthy fear around, am I gonna mix with the other executives, especially the executives that have been executives for a really, really long time. I guess what I can say there is just be nice. Everyone loves nice people. And And it all worked out. But yeah, there were some things that you're very confident in and some things that you just needed to learn as you progress in the role.
Thank you. What did you learn during the process of starting each of your new jobs that surprised you?
Oh, gosh. Lots of things surprise you. I'll use every single one of the positions that I've had, I'll use this example. What always surprises me is when you transition with the prior leader, they leave you feeling like, golden, everything's good here, we're good, everything's good. We've got everything kind of mastered over here. Don't worry about the operations, everything's good. And then when you get into the job, you find, oh my goodness, let's uncover this rock and uncover that rock and uncover this rock. And so there are things that you're gonna find. And to, I guess, just have an open mind that can be a little bit scary sometimes, but also every single weakness is absolutely an opportunity. And also every one of our board members or every one of our leaders always appreciates the surfacing of those problems and then elevating the opportunities that come along with them to mitigate that.
Thank you so much. So going back to the interview process that you were going through for this new CEO position that you're filling, how was that 4-month interview process? And do you have any advice for us going into interviews for certain roles?
Yes. Hopefully my last experience doesn't happen too many times for us. I'll just say that. Imagine, I think, Trish, it was like 400 or 500 applicants. Was it something like that? 500. So there was 500 applicants for this position. And they had the really hard job to whittle that down to one. And so the original, I think they got it to something like, let's just say 12 to 15 applications. And then from that 12 to 15, they had an initial set of interviews. And from that set of interviews, you went to a six panel. And from that six, you did an initial presentation to a few executives and board members, et cetera. They had a committee, actually. And then from there, they narrowed it down to three. And from that three, you did an entire, like a big presentation, 30-minute presentation, followed by about an hour and a half of Q&A with the entire board. So a really rigorous process, but I get it. A really big decision, right? It's who are you going to choose for the organization that you care and love and so very much, and it's done really, really well. I guess my advice to everyone would be to, again, have an open mind. I go back to this because it's really important, because I have this with every single job that I've ever taken. You're interviewing that organization at the same time that they're interviewing you. Remember that. It might not be the right fit for you. So you're interviewing them just as much as they're interviewing you.
Thank you.
That's some really good advice. Thank you. I'd noticed that you had mentioned your family was fairly important to you. Are you seeing anybody right now that is taking in your footsteps, or any little ones that possibly might as well?
Oh, this is very sweet. I'm not gonna lie, this is my favorite question. I love talking, I just do, I love my family. I love my family, and they're just, my goodness, so good. Does anyone listen to the podcast Smartless? Anyone? Come on, Sean Hayes, Jason Bateman, and Will Arnett. Oh, come on, yeah, it is so good. It is so, so good. And Smartless. Smartless. It is really good. Highly recommend. Steph Curry was just on it, and he blew my mind. That man is just unbelievable. So on Smartless, Sean Hayes just said, made a comment, something like, if you're loved, it's okay when crap happens, right? When bad stuff happens, if you're loved, it's gonna be okay. And it's just so important. And I have felt like that with my family. And we don't have we've never had the most money. We've never had the most success. We're very, very humble beginnings and very, very humble currency across our family. But we love each other. And so I do feel that way. So I will say my youngest daughter She graduated from UCLA 3 years ago, has gotten her master's degree, and has been teaching for 3 years. On top of that, she coaches two volleyball teams, and she is teaching at a Title I school in Richmond. So, and she refuses, she lives in Petaluma, and she refuses to move because this school means so much to her. So she reminds me a lot of me. When some, you know, it doesn't matter how much money you're making, it really doesn't. It matters what impact you're making on the world. And so I really see a lot of her drive and passion that I've had in my career. And thank you for asking that question.
Thank you. It's very apparent that you've had such a successful career, very impressive, but what are you most excited about, like, going into these next few years?
Okay, I'll give you a couple, because of course I'll do a business and then I'm going to do a personal. On the business side, I'm really excited to be in a position where I can really see myself growing old in the position and growing roots in this position. I think that a lot of my positions that I've had in my career have been have had kind of that jumping off point, a lot of them, but I think this one, I can see myself growing roots and growing old with this organization. It's an incredible organization with an incredible mission. And then I will tell you a personal component that I'm really excited about, grandkids. I want grandkids. I just do, and I know they're only 28, 26, 24, but I can't wait to have grandkids.
I want to thank you guys for your awesome questions, and want to take a little bit of time to have some questions from the audience. And I'll pass the mic to you to pass the other one.
Thank you, Dr. DeFremery. I need one more microphone, please, because we'll have microphones on each side of the hall. And Carla Aldana is going to ask the first question. Oh, is it Juliet's going to do it?
No,
Carla.
Hi. I wanted to know if there was a piece of advice that you received when you were first starting that stuck with you up until now.
Yeah, I mean the very first piece of advice. I come from a rich Catholic background. And the golden rule has always been incredibly steeped, which is always treat people the way you want to be treated. And that really seems so simple, and it is, but it's also something that a lot of people forget a lot along the way. And then I would say, just remember, every interaction that you have, treat it like an interview. It's an opportunity. There are so many opportunities. You never know. I cannot tell you the amount of times that along my journey, because business is not easy. Every day is not, you know, walking easily down Candyland Lane. It's absolutely not. So do I get pissy sometimes, and do I say the wrong things? I mean, Trish can attest to it. I'm not always, right? But we have to be careful of that. You have to be careful of that. And I cannot tell you how many times there have been interactions that show up down the road, years later. You know, there's actually a very important, this is a great, I'll be very, very, very vulnerable and transparent. There is a person that I'm gonna have to interact with in San Francisco that I interviewed in Washington, D.C. The interview did not go that well for whatever reason. I think I was disappointed. She acted like she wanted the job, and I thought she wanted the job, and it's not like I was rude, but I wasn't probably nearly as understanding as I could have. And now this person is in an incredibly important position for our organization. So just remember, again, it's always an interview, and just be very, very aware of emotional intelligence. Incredibly important.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, sure, I'll stand up. Okay. So you were talking about how important it is to make sure that the people you work with are happy. I imagine it's probably very, is that ringing for me? Very difficult to maintain that as your company is expanding so drastically and so quickly. And I was wondering if you have any tips for scaling not just the company, but scaling the facilities required for keeping people happy?
Excellent. That's a very wise, very deep question. I love this. Again, it's our number one priority, and it's the, I guess, our number one focus area as we grow. We actually are, we put out a press release not too long ago that we are intending to merge with another organization in the South Bay. Nothing like starting a job and 6 months later actually merging with another organization, but that's what I was brought here to do. Here's what's important. I said it before. Imagine if there was something really important happening just in your friend group. Just think about that, in your friend group, and you didn't know about it. How much would that tick you off? Now imagine you're working and you're trying to get important work that you really care about. Imagine if you're doing that and there was some component of that that you didn't know about. How frustrating would that be? So it's really, really important that everyone gets an invitation. There's stakeholders of all types in your organization. You have to be thoughtful about all of those stakeholders and including every single one of them, because the second you forget one of them is the second you're gonna build a system and you're gonna have to backtrack it. You're gonna have to fix that system because somebody that really has important information didn't get included in the sausage making, as they said. The other component is there's something called a people pulse or staff satisfaction. Never underestimate how important that is to give everyone in an organization a forum confidentially to tell you how they feel, tell you exactly how you feel. And it's okay, you may not like it, who cares? It doesn't. That's not what's important. It's important that everyone feels really, really heard.
Thank you.
All right. What piece of advice would you give to people who are starting their careers?
Okay. The biggest piece of advice that I would give is, search your soul for what is most meaningful to you. Do a real strong search of what that looks like, because there's so many different opportunities and industries and roads that you can go down. So do a real good inventory of what's important to you, and that's gonna help you drive down the road that's gonna be right for you.
While working in the medical industry on the executive side, have you had to make any difficult decisions between prioritizing ethics and business?
Mm. Oh, this is interesting. This was a a question on one of my interview panels back in on one of my positions. Always, yes, especially in healthcare. And I would say the biggest one is going to be in my career. I've because I worked for a health plan for 7 years, the same health plan, Kaiser. There is a lot of decision making around utilization, which means, say you break your leg and you break it in a very different fashion of, you know, you needed a specialist of some sort. And we think in Kaiser that you have that specific specialist and we're gonna go down that road. But you're like, hey, I wanna go to that specialist over there. And sometimes ethically, like, you really do think that it's right to let that person go to where they wanna go for that service. It could be a brain injury, it could be an autistic child, it could be, right, et cetera, that run the gamut. You're always ethically up against the explanation of benefits. So you have a benefit that you have entitlement to. And usually that benefit says, if we provide that service has to be provided under this care. But ethically, it doesn't feel right. You want them to be able to go get that care wherever they want. Not the fun part of being a healthcare executive.
Okay, my question, a lot of us over here were wondering, since you mentioned that your parents were hippie and that's why they named you Skelly, a lot of us were wondering what your brother's name is.
Oh my gosh, I should have said this. Listen to so my brother and my two sisters, their names are David, Annie, and Samantha. How fair is that? That's not fair. But I'm going to go back to what my Aunt Mary Jane always told me, because I used to say that a lot. She used to say, Skelly, life is not fair.
So looking back on your career now, is there anything you regret or would change?
I love that. You know, I think, again, back to that whole component, here's the deal. Here's what I would do. Maybe gain some more skill set around, again, that emotional intelligence component, so that here's something someone told me. Never let them see a sweat. I know that's like a, right, everybody knows that, but truly, you should not be overly up or overly down, right? We should be pretty darn neutral all the time. And early in my career, that was tough, especially because I'm in healthcare and I care deeply about people. So you wanted to tell management where to take that, you know? So I would say, just maybe a little more education. But the truth is if I hadn't had all those peaks and valleys and all that all over the place and all those mistakes, I wouldn't be where I am today. And I will say, that's probably another lesson that I feel like I strongly advise all of you. Be bold, make mistakes. It's absolutely okay. I think, you know, no question is a dumb question. I'm sure you hear that all the time. But also, no idea is a bad idea. Go down it. Go down that idea. Make that recommendation. People want to hear from you. They really do. Every single one of us has an incredibly intelligent perspective, and the more diverse our perspective, the better the outcome is going to be, without a doubt.
Just real quick before the next question's asked, you kind of sparked. So you seem really sure. You seem really sure, assured of yourself and your confidence, and it's inspiring. So I just want to know, in being a person in business, is the best confidence knowing your passion and being happy with that profession that you're pursuing? Because it seems like you just found your niche and you're really just clearly you're just excelling in it. So I want to know what you think the best confidence is.
That's a very sweet compliment. I didn't always have this confidence. I have, again, I'll be very vulnerable. I have had let's call it debilitating anxiety in my life, where it was really, really hard for me to speak, or for me to, you know, I come from the humble, I can't even explain to you, right? Things like going to high school and having kids say, oh, look, she's wearing outfit number 2 today. How great is that? Or what are you doing? Why your uniform isn't clean today? Or, you know, I come from very humble beginnings. And Dean Lee and I were talking about it. I think that makes you really strong. when you have that upbringing, it makes you incredibly tough. And so while I didn't always have the skill set to be confident, I think, yes, my passion for sure. My passion for people, my passion for healthcare, my passion for getting to do great work with great people for sure is gonna resonate all over the place. But I also think I truly believe I got very, very, and I thought I'd never say this. I never thought I would say this. I am extremely lucky for the hardship and adversity that I had in my life. Extremely lucky for it.
Hi, my name is Lex. So my question is, what sustainability practices does your company focus on?
Say that one more time. The what practices?
What's sustain? Oh shoot! All right.
It's okay. It's okay.
How do you say it?
Systemic.
Sustainability.
Sustainability.
Yeah.
Nice. That's a great question. Thank you for that one. Okay. All right. Y'all are business folks. Here's the deal. You have financials, right? You have P&Ls for a reason. I really want to impress upon you, sometimes it's okay to color outside the lines with your financials. Sometimes. And I'm going to say, I'm going to say those sometimes should be extremely rare. You have a business model, you have a financial model, you have a pay scale. It's really important to educate the staff and the people that you work with why affordability is so important. It's important because of your sustainability. It's so important because if you start coloring outside the lines and you start saying, yeah, that's our pay scale, but you know what? Jimmy works so hard. He works so hard and so, blah, blah, blah. Yes, I get that, but so does Sally and so does Mary and so does Tracy and so does da-da-da. And so then you start having an operating model that is outside of your financial model, and your operating costs are much greater than your revenue, and that doesn't work. So part of that is sustainability related to kind of operations and how you work financials. And I'm gonna go back to it. Your number one piece, the only way you're gonna sustain an organization is if you invest deeply in the people that do the work with you. It's the only way. You won't get anywhere if the people that you work with aren't really, really excited about the work that they're doing every day, and they understand exactly what they're supposed to do every day as part of the greater vision and mission. Every single person has a job that's critically important. Otherwise, right, we don't need that job. Everyone has a critical job. So making sure that they understand what that is and how it has an impact on the greater vision of the organization and the outcomes.
So that was the last question.
So many good questions. Yeah. Thank you, everybody.
And I really want to say thank you for such a fantastic talk and great answers. To wrap things up, I'm going to invite...
We have one more. Yeah, absolutely.
Hi, my name's Morgan. I wanted to know, what is something you're most proud of regarding your career journey and in your personal life, respectively?
Are you trying to get me cry at the very end? Is that what
absolutely.
You're doing right here?
Absolutely.
Of course, okay. So I'm really, really, really proud of a lot of the operational outcomes that I've been able to accomplish. There have been, my work in Washington, D.C., being that close to the national capital and being able to make a turnaround operation successful, I'm just so, so proud of that. But I am without a doubt most proud of the times in my life where family friends or direct friends have been able to call me and say, hey, my mom's in the hospital, or hey, I'm in the hospital, or hey, my grandma's dying, or hey, I've got this friend who's in a SNF. And the fact that I am so deeply involved and invested in every part of every organization that I work for, because I believe in that. I believe that leaders don't lead from the top only. And so I'm able to say, hey, I have this family member. They're in this hospital. They're here. Can we take care of them? And they get amazing care. You get to see it, and you get to talk to people who love you, and they get to give you direct feedback. Oh my gosh, do you have any idea what you just did for me? I mean, that's the coolest thing in the world, to see the fruits of exactly what you get to do on a big, broad scale, but see it super duper personal. So I would say that, and that's a great question. Thank you for that.
That's awesome. I have lots of questions too, but and I'm sure others do as well, but it's getting kind of late, and so I want to thank you one more time for just a really fantastic talk and really great questions, you guys, and awesome answers, and hand the mic over to Dean Lee to sort of bring the evening to a close.
So I just wanted to thank you, Skill,
of course,
for being here. And today, I've been in this forum many times. Today was in terms of energy level and passion and the kinds of question, enthusiasm is the highest. I think that's due to your passion and your energy.
Thank you.
And thank you all the students who asked wonderful questions. And before we close, I would like to encourage you, instead of just going back to your dorm and try to do your homework, right? Try to network with the speaker. I know it's one too many, it's hard, but make an effort. And for all the students who ask questions, can you come up and then take photo with Skelly?